All right, we are halfway home on a Tuesday. Ben and Woods, 97.3. The Fan, such a pleasure.
Oh, no, that's not what we're called anymore. Paul Risdell, B. Higgy, and Lil Woodsy.
I don't want to do this. Lil Woodsy?
Lil Woodsy.
Why am I Lil Woodsy?
I know. Brandon had that in the chat, and I thought that's our new name today.
What was yours?
B. Higgy.
B. Higgy.
Paul Risdell, B. Higgy, and Lil Woodsy.
I don't like Lil Woodsy. I don't want to be Lil anything. I'm not Lil. There's nothing about me that's Lil. Literally.
There's nothing about any of us
that's Lil. Seriously. I have Lil nipples. That'll be mine.
That's true.
I do have Lil tiny nipples.
Right, can, it's Ben, Paul, and Lil Nipples.
And Lil Nipples.
Lil Nipples. Lil Nips.
Lil Nips. With a Z.
They're very tiny, and they're always protruding from my shirt. I actually asked my wife recently. I go, should I cover them up with something? She goes, idiot. Then they'll see the cover through the shirt. Like an
X of black tape or something.
No, they have these things for runners. I don't know. I don't run. But they have these things for runners that they put on there to prevent chafing.
Well, you see all the soccer players, and they all wear the
bras.
Sports bras now, even the guys.
I'm not going to wear a sports bra under a T-shirt just walking around just to go to work.
But I assume it's for some sort of support.
They're always, I'm always nipping. Always. Every picture I take, one of our listeners, Fritz, always, cold in there? I'm like, I get it. My nipples stick out. Leave me the F alone. I get it. Every picture I take, I'm like trying to blouse my shirt out a little bit so you don't, look, right here.
There they are.
They're always
there, right
hard.
There.
I don't understand it, man. I'm about to get them just cut off, dude. I don't need them. They're literally useless on men. You know, we don't need them.
See what they can do at QC Kinetics when you go.
I will, actually. Can you guys shrink these or something? It just doesn't make any sense, man. Carlos says, I'm not going to wear one of those. One of those, you can't say it anymore. The wife, you know, they used to call them tank tops.
The undershirt tank tops.
Yes, you can't call that anymore. But I'm always, they're just always that way. Sorry. Yes, Caitlin, I'll get them pierced. That way everyone can then
go immediately
to, oh, wow, that guy has two nipple piercings. Interesting. No, I don't think that's for me, but great to be here with you guys this morning. I'm Woodsy. That is Paul Reindl. That's Ben Higgins. Wife Pleaser is the new name for that shirt. I promise you if I wore one at home, my wife would not be pleased. Not even in the slightest.
Oh. So,
I still wear them. You can't call them what you called them.
Right. Right. Wife Pleaser.
They're convenient and efficient for what I need for them. Like, it's like an undershirt without wearing
a... It's a tank top undershirt.
Like, I'm actually not wearing one right now, but I wouldn't want to wear another T-shirt under this T-shirt. I would want to wear, like, a more...
I don't mind me. I'm just pressing my nipples into my chest is what I'm doing here on Ben and Woods Live on the radio.
Diesel says those sports bras that the guys wear are... They track players' vitals and movements. There's, like, a computer chip in there, and it... It helps with the, like,
I get the readout.
Metrics of
you
the game.
Sat on your ass for 12 hours. You played on your phone for 9. Like, what is it going to tell me that I'm doing every day? I saw you raised your voice at around 5:30 when it was dinner time. That's it. That's all it would track for me. No, I was completely thrown off track by that. But I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindl. That's Ben Higgins. And you are listening to Ben and Woods Summer Break, if you couldn't tell. Get a little loose and fast and loose. This week, I loved your idea, and I can't wait to hear your story.
So, when I saw Sean Lewis getting up on a surfboard and taking his lesson yesterday, and I think he did get up once. Congratulations, coach! I got the sense. All right, he's never doing this again. He's a Midwestern guy. Did it for a charity bit. Fine, you went out surfing once, but then I realized we must all have that one sport, that summer activity that we tried once. Looked fun. Other people made it look really fun. And then you went out and did it, and it was absolutely miserable. I mean, you got injured or something, and it was just horrible. And for me, it happened, I think it was around 13 years old. And we went on a family vacation, surprise, surprise, to Lake Tahoe. The only time I've ever been to Lake Tahoe. And we had friends, and they had a boat. And they said, well, here's what we're doing today. We're going out. Water skiing.
Oh.
Okay. I mean, it looks fun. I see people on the lake.
It's so much fun.
It's placid. It's serene. It looks really easy.
They're waving with one hand on the rope.
Oh, absolutely. You don't have to do any work.
Drinking a beer.
Yeah. The boat pulls you along. This must be great. This is like a perfect vacation. You got the views. You got the mountains up there. Gorgeous. You're just...
I'm into it.
You're just gliding along the water with no cares in the world. I'm excited to try this for the first time.
Now, you're 13.
Yeah.
Give me your specs at the time. 6 feet tall? Were you always tall?
Okay. Yeah, I think it was just starting to kind of grow, probably just getting about 6 feet. But pretty normal-sized kid at that point. And they got the gear. I got the... partial wetsuit thing, top on. And then
the life jacket.
Get the life jacket. Here's what you do. You're going to, jump in, grab the thing, then we'll pull away, and then we'll slowly. You will slowly pull up. And as you pull up, you just, you lean back, and then you go. And it's just that easy.
Oh, no.
But of course, they did not tell you. First of all, Lake Tahoe is a giant pit of melted snow.
It's butt cold. Butt cold.
Absolutely freezing.
Cringing. Thinking
Absolutely
about it.
Freezing. I thought the ocean was cold down here. No.
It's like ice bath cold.
But that's okay. I'm not going to be in it. I'm gliding on top of it.
The wind is going to hit me. It's sunny.
It's a nice day. Yeah. It's like 75, 80 degrees. No problem. I'm not actually going to be in this water. Oh, no. The second they pull out the first time, I just fall face forward right into the water. Oh.
No, you gotta stay taut.
You gotta lean back.
Keep the rope taut.
I'm not sure, by the way, just to interrupt, I'm not sure that there's amount of money I wouldn't spend for video of Ben attempting.
Like thousands of dollars.
It's fine. I mean, everyone struggles
Ben,
the first time.
Keep it taut.
Second time, the skis go splaying in both directions, back into the water. Now you're trying to get back up to the surface.
Well, because you look like a jackass, too.
Okay.
Your skis are floating away.
The boat has to pull back. They have to slowly. You got to find the thing
down again.
He's down again. It's like, we're doing it. A third time, again, just splat, just right, like, not 10 seconds, not 30 seconds, 1 second, and I'm back down into the water again. I think we got to about the fourth attempt, and I go, no! Get me out of this water. Get me onto the boat. I never, ever, ever want to try to do this again.
And you're sitting there on the side, and look, your dad's looking at you, and he's disappointed. And you're disappointed.
Everybody is. They want to go driving around in a boat. They don't want to just sit there pulling around back to get
back again. Time.
Exactly. Every single time.
Yeah, he's like... You want to try it? No.
It's miserable. It's embarrassing.
Mine was fairly similar, except I went.
You need to use your core muscles. I don't have any.
And you put your foot in that rubber ski that's not very tight at all, and it's wet, and then it's floating away, and you're under the water.
I think the third time one of the skis came off, they had to try to get it all back on in the water.
My first time water skiing, I went with a girlfriend, and she was a senior in high school, Ben, and she was like phenomenal. She'd grown up doing, she could do tricks and one leg and barefoot and all this. Same thing happened. I lost my shorts at one point. It was horrible. I did finally get up, but it wasn't. Once I got up, it was not enjoyable in the slightest. Like there was, it hurt.
Yeah,
and you're spending the whole time trying not to die.
And then the dad is, hey, you're making love to my daughter under, not under. We were 18, but you're having sex with my daughter. I know that for sure. I'm gonna rip across these things, and then you go. You're out. You're done. It was horrific. That wasn't mine though. Mine was, I got set up on a blind date one time, and her brilliant idea was to take your boy paddleboarding out in La Jolla.
Again, looks like a serene.
God.
Easy activity, doesn't it?
When you see them, they're standing, and they're standing, and they're so fit, and they're just whooshing through the waves. Yeah. Piece of cake.
Yeah, easy.
So
easy.
We go to pick up the boards and stuff. The boards are moronically heavy, right? And I'm stumbling around with her. She's got hers, no problem. I'm dying. I'm on the way down to the water and everything else, and I go, I have no... She goes, this is easy. This is super easy. Bro, I couldn't stand up for more than 3 seconds, completely embarrassed myself, hated every second, trying to go. It's hard enough to paddle through the waves when you're swimming or on a surfboard, a longboard or something. on that paddleboard, trying to navigate my way through there with all upper body strength and standing on that thing. It was, I go, this is the first and last time. Then, when you're done, what do you have to do? You have to lug that MF-er back up to the shop, dude. It was horrible. Horrible. So I did it once, and I never, ever did it again. Ever. This was somebody in the chat, Chris, just freaked me out. Said she went snorkeling. Chris could be a guy or a girl. Snorkeling in Kauai. I'll be there 2 weeks from today. Got stung by 1,000 Portuguese jellyfish, then had to swim through them to get back to the boat.
Oh, no.
So chances I go in the water now are nil. Nil. So yeah, that was mine. Paulie, you have anything that you tried, or you just naturally athletic and everything?
The exact same experience with Ben.
Thank you.
One
I'm not
time
the only
I tried
one.
Water skiing. Yeah, one leg went one way.
But
one
you've wakeboarded, which I think is hard as hell too.
See, I started wakeboarding, could not water ski. I'm going back to the board.
Sorry,
I never
Carrie, not Chris. Carrie.
I never tried mountain skiing. I would snowboard, not skiing. I just, the two boards, the two legs, it just didn't work for me. So I just couldn't get that. But to be different, I'll just say fishing.
Fishing.
I mean, yeah.
A little bit different in the sense that it wasn't like a strenuous physical activity.
But it was like one and done.
But I'm like, this is the stupidest thing ever.
Yeah.
You just sit out here all day.
Yeah.
All day.
I also don't get it. Like, my nephew loves fishing. We went on our trip last week and they go to the lake. Just, I mean, absolutely loves fishing. And I
just don't get it.
I don't have that passion.
I'd rather do less.
I don't know if you guys know this about me, but sitting still is very, very difficult for me. So to sit at the edge of a lake in Texas when it's 100 degrees out and go, bloop, click, wait for that cork to go under. I liked it when I was six, you know, but now there's just no way. No chance.
Andrews in the chat said, one time I held on to the back of a Sea-Doo. While my uncle drove, the jet pushed my shorts off, and I was just getting dragged bare ass, LOL.
I snorkeled once in Belize, and I think I'm good. It's not like I really hated it, but it was a one and done.
But you don't find yourself on Saturdays grabbing your snorkel and your flippers and going down to the cove.
Yeah. And even if I went somewhere else, tropical, and it was an option, I'd be like, I'm good. There was coral that you had to like, they're like, do not drift. Like, pay attention to where your body drifts, because if you like lean into a wall of coral, you will be cut to shreds. And then over on the left, those are some sharks. They're not going to hurt you, though. They're more afraid of you than you are.
Of course they are.
They don't look very scared.
I'm gonna try to snorkel in Kauai in a couple weeks. But we're like in a bay, in Hanalei Bay. So I think maybe it's different. I'm not for sure. Have you been there? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if it's different in that what?
I don't know. It's not out there.
Has anyone ever tried scuba diving? That's something I'm not even willing to go to that level.
I've never tried it. You guys can call us with yours, 833-288-0973. But Ben, I love yours. I loved it. It's hard. And
it's
embarrassing.
You do,
and
it's awful.
It's mortifying, man. And you just feel like I'm definitely lesser than. And then you see like other people do it, and they do it with such ease and grace. I just have never had that.
Doesn't have to be on the water. You know, you got ATV accident or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whatever. If you've got a summer activity
or done.
Sport or story you tried once and why you never tried it again, please share it with us. 833-288-0973. Get some phone calls coming up. Jocelyn said, that's because you've never tried fishing, Ben. Oh, I've tried it. I've even caught fish. It doesn't do anything for me. Here, oh, look, I got it out of the water.
Yeah, throw it back in.
Toss it back in.
Yeah, if you were starving and had to eat
stick your fingers in its mouth and yank the hook out.
Pull the hook out and throw it back in? No, thanks.
I always kind of feel bad for the fish. I do.
Yeah. Well, they say they can't feel it.
I know,
but
allegedly.
I doubt that.
All right.
Give us a call, 833-288-0973. We can also talk some Padres draft coming up. First, a check of traffic with Kelly Danick here on 97.3 The Fan. Ben and Woods, summer break, and we got the calls coming in. Shared some stories of the summer sport or activity you tried once and never again. For me, it was water skiing.
Yeah, it was paddleboarding.
Paddleboarding for Woods.
Poly fishing. A lot of water.
Poly. Yeah, well, it's summer. So you stay around the water. Let's go out to the phones. 833-288-0973. Let's start with Chuck at the top of the board. Chuck, good morning. Welcome to Ben and Woods.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Good, buddy.
What happened?
Well, my wife and I went to Cancun 1 year, many years ago, but we wanted to go scuba diving, so we had to get certified here, which we did in a 10-foot pool.
Right.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Our first dive there was 85 feet.
Oh my god.
That's what they took it down 85 feet, but the water was so clear it didn't feel that bad because you could see the bottom. But it was still, you're breathing, when you hear you're breathing in the thing, it's like, it's so intense.
Darth Vader.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And you did it once?
One time, I've never been back.
One and done. Yeah, no interest, man. The being underwater is cool. Look, I'm not a free diver or anything, but I'll dive to the bottom of the 12-foot pool, and that's good enough for me.
I can't even go that low. I go about 6 feet down, and I start feeling that pressure in my ear. I don't know how to clear it.
You don't like it.
I hate it. I can't stand it.
So I kind of like it.
Really?
Yeah, when I get down to touch the bottom of the pool and then shoot back up.
I feel like my brain is going to explode. So I stay away from the deep end of the pool.
But he's right about the... When you're snorkeling, same thing.
There's got to be a claustrophobic feel.
100%.
I mean, snorkeling, at least, you're right at the top. And if you want, you just pop right up and breathe. But scuba diving, you can't do that. You got to trust your tank and your apparatus.
Yeah, and your training.
Yeah. Oof. I'm not too happy
about
it.
Got any more?
Let's go. Yeah, we got Eric. Eric, welcome to Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. How are you?
Good, guys. Glad to be able to share my story. So my story is not technically a one and done in the sport, but it's more of a, I'm never going to try this hard again. I think you guys probably be able to relate. High school girlfriend, you know, you want to be involved in their activities. She was a really good tennis player. So I'd practice with her on the weekends and whenever we could. And, you know, I'm competitive. She's very competitive. I always try really hard. I'm not great at tennis, but I have some natural athletic ability. One day, I actually beat her in just a game, right? So I, 45-30, whatever, right?
Yeah.
I take one. I lose everything else, 6-1, 6-0, 6, right? She crushes me every time. But as I hit the winning point, I start approaching the net. In frustration, she decides she's going to hit the tennis ball back toward my direction, hits me square in the throat.
In the throat!
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I, from that moment, never tried hard again. I was, I just returned them back to her.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was it.
Like,
but just square in the throat,
bro. So. The frustration move of like throwing your bat or your helmet or, you know, something like that. And I've thrown my bat before after striking out and hit the guy on deck and he was going to fight me. You know what I mean? Like that always goes bad. It always goes bad.
You know, watching sports as much as I do, I always respect, because to be great in whatever it is, and we cover the greats of baseball, obviously, with the Padres and watch them in the other sports, you pretty much have to be ultra competitive.
Yeah.
There aren't that many professional athletes who aren't super competitive, but you can't also be a giant baby when you lose. Not, I'm not saying that Eric's girlfriend was a giant baby, but you can't every time you lose just throw a fit and take it out on your competition. And so you have to also be super competitive, but also kind of gracious at the same time.
That's
a tough combination.
It's got to be under control.
Yeah.
Controlled fury is really the best kind of fury.
I mean, they say that about some of the, we'll talk about the draft picks. We talked about Cash Mayfield.
Yeah.
Hates losing. I mean, it's the first thing that I think that AJ looks for in a draft. Someone who absolutely hates losing.
Yep.
But you're going to do it a lot in baseball, especially.
You have to. That's great.
Sometimes the simple stories here are the worst. This is Jeff in the chat. Said, back when I lived in Phoenix, my ex and I had gone river tubing. Said, I put sunscreen on my upper body and legs, but did not think about when sitting in the tube how my trunks would adjust. You know, they'd kind of ride up a little bit. So just says, I got a horrible burn from where my legs weren't in the water or under the trunk.
Yeah.
So I'm picturing like this ring.
A ring of red.
Giant red.
Yeah.
Right above the knee, but below. Oh, that's just miserable.
The tubing bit is a fun bit. We used to tube the river. You know, you put a cooler on a tube, and then you tie a bunch of tubes together, and you all go floating down the river. It's fun for about 3 hours. Then you're like, it's 106, and I've had 44 Coors Light. This is not going well for me right now.
I totally forgot about this. Same trip to Lake Tahoe.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
We go river rafting on the Truckee River. It is about the most gentle little stretch.
It's a stream.
It's a stream. There's nothing.
It's a little creek.
Nothing.
Yeah, it's a creek.
And you know, there's a guide, there's a pro who's really guiding the boat, but you do have oars. And there's, at the end, he says, okay, this is the one spot. We just need to stay away from this, like, area in the middle with the rocks. And it's like, okay, you need to get your backs into it.
Get it going.
I don't have a back to get into it. And we just start drifting right toward the spot that he doesn't want.
Who's in the boat? You?
Me. I think
your
my
brother.
Sister, brother. Yeah, mom. Tipped right over, out of the boat.
Oh, my God, dude.
Oh, no.
And you're right there. You're getting out, like, you know, 100 yards away. And, you know, they got you back in. But, of course, tipped right over into the water.
I'm never going to Lake Tahoe again. I want that. I need a tea time.
Golfing only.
And I think it's casinos there now, too.
Casinos,
so you'll be good.
Casinos and golfing. That's the only reason to go to Lake Tahoe.
What a traumatic trip that was for you. It's like, never again. Country clubs is the only thing I want to go. It's the only place I want to go on vacation.
I do not want to go on any adventure trips.
No, I'm with you at this point. I got too much to lose. You know, holy cow. That's great. Thanks for the calls, guys. Incredible stuff.
Good stuff. All right, let's take a quick time out. We'll come back.
We'll do some draft stuff.
I do want to get into some of the draft stuff from yesterday. There's some interesting prospects. And while most of them are several years away, there is one guy who there's an outside chance you might even see him this season.
Get out of here.
Yes.
This season?
I heard that before. I've heard it before. Doesn't happen often. Could happen this go around. We'll tell you who and why coming up next with Bennett Woods on 97.3 The Fan. One more story here from our unofficial official Bennett Woods photographer, Brian Sims. Summer activities gone wrong. Tweets, mountain biking down on ski resort runs. I was younger, dumb, trying to impress a woman, and almost ended up in the hospital. Will never forget the sound of my voice saying, that sounds fun.
Yeah, I'm all in.
Not that fun.
Always to impress a woman.
Appreciate everybody sharing with us. All right, we're going to get into some baseball draft coverage here. Baseball coverage on 97.3 The Fan is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Padres making 10 picks yesterday. Get into them after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So normally at this time on a Tuesday, we'd be talking to Jesse Agler, playing the Incorporator. But on summer break, we give all our regulars some time off to enjoy the break, and we'll get back to Jesse next Tuesday.
I texted him yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah. And I just asked him. I said, you ready to get back to work? He's like, got my little one crying. I'm trying to get my other one to sleep. And I go, all right, asked and answered. Yeah, I know exactly what Mr. Agler's going through. That guy likes being at the ballpark.
Honestly, though, instead of the Incorporator, almost like some of the names of the players the Padres drafted are Incorporator-like.
No question.
In their obviously, the first day, Padres took Cash Mayfield and Boston Bateman, two left-handed high school pitchers. But yesterday, they had 10 more selections, including two extra picks at the end of the fourth round, which were in exchange for the qualifying offers they made to Blake Snell and Josh Hader. So ended up with 10 picks between the third and the 10th round. In the third round, took another high schooler, a shortstop named Cobb Hightower.
Cash Boston Cobb to start.
From North Carolina, 6'1", 180. Obviously, you know, long way away from the big leagues. But with their first pick in the fourth round, they took the guy that there's at least an outside chance, probably not likely, but an outside chance you might even see him this season. His name is Tyson Nabors, and he's a right-handed relief pitcher from Kansas State. So, you know, a little bit older, more experienced, throws already in the mid-90s. He's got good, like close to major league quality stuff. Now, you know, he's not a starter. He doesn't project as necessarily a high ceiling guy, but he projects as a guy who could get to the big leagues really quickly
and
maybe
get out.
Maybe contribute to a bullpen that, you know, is in need of extra arms. So it's not out of the question that, you know, they throw Tyson Nabors down, you know, and single A, double A, and he does well, and they have need in September for an arm. Again, not expecting it, but it's not impossible.
He's the most major league ready, perhaps.
Probably of all the of all the guys they drafted, man, he's the closest to the big leagues.
I can remember having the same conversation about Kevin Copps, who won that award in college, and it was like, bro, this kid, this closer from Arkansas, I haven't seen him since.
He's still down there.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
You know,
and that's why it's still on.
That struck me yesterday was I saw somebody tweet this about the very next pick,
right,
Ben. Kavaris Tears from Tennessee, University of Tennessee. 6 foot, 200-pounder. He's an outfielder. What got me was this description of
scouting report.
The scouting report. Few bats in the country can even come close to the hellish raw power that Tears can juice into a baseball. It's elite bat speed from the left side with light tower game power.
Light tower.
Light tower that he's shown off against lesser competition. Again, hellish raw power is an incredible. If you described me in any way with hellish raw power at anything, he said he can juice into a baseball.
Certainly intriguing. Now, why, if he's got that much power, why did he fall all the way to the end of the fourth round?
Breaking balls have given him a little trouble,
okay.
Benjamin, throughout his collegiate career.
And there's no defense really there. I mean, he plays the outfield, but
they said he has scouts like him in left field. He's played all three outfield positions. He's a left-handed thrower. He said lacks the arm strength to handle right field at a high level. The report here is mostly bat. With 80 grade raw power.
But you only need a DH at some point as well. So even if he doesn't pan out defensively, there's could be a place for him in the organization. And then
hellish raw power.
Yeah, I like that description. The next pick is a name you're familiar with, at least a last name. Clark Candiotti, son of Tom Candiotti, the former knuckleballer and now Arizona Diamondbacks broadcaster who's talked and worked with Matt Waldron a little bit. Now, yep.
He does not throw the knuckleball.
I don't think Clark throws the knuckleball.
Up.
Yeah, he's a big kid, though. 6'4", 235, right-hander, who pitched at the University of Arizona, but not a knuckleballer like his dad. Although,
no.
I guess you could always say, hey, worst comes to worst, it's not working out. Teach me, Dad. Teach me, Matt, and you can go that direction with your career.
I have a hard time, and if we ever get a chance to talk to and interview Clark Candiotti, I want to say, buddy. Why? Why wouldn't you? You have like one of the elite teachers of the knuckleball there at your disposal. Your dad, he has to teach you how to throw it. He has to teach you all the trade secrets. Did you mess around with it? Like, he would be a fascinating interview for me, Clark Candiotti.
In the fifth round, the Padres went back to the high school route after a run of college players with perhaps the name of the draft. Third baseman out of Norris High School in Nebraska, Cale Fountain.
Cale Fountain.
K-A-L-E, like the leafy green, and Fountain.
Yeah, Cale Fountain.
Cale Fountain in the fifth round. Then a few other picks, didn't see much. More college players, Darian McDowell, right fielder from West Florida, Kai Roberts, Utah, center fielder, Nick Wissman, right-handed reliever from Dayton, Zach Evans from Lenoir Ryan University in North Carolina. And then a name maybe you heard of in the 10th round, last pick of day two, USD, third baseman and outfielder Jack Costello was the second leading hitter on the Toreros, who were a really good NCAA tournament team last season. Had, I think, like 7 home runs, hit .291, 60 runs batted in.
They call him Clutch.
Good, well-rounded player, and certainly exciting. You haven't seen the Padres take a lot of local guys in the draft in recent years, but something must have caught AJ, Chris Kemp's eyes to take a guy from USD, which was and there were a few other players from USD who were selected earlier, including Jacob Christian, who was the WCC player of the year. I think he went in the fifth round, maybe to the, was it the Tigers or the Giants? One of those two teams, but a few other local players selected yesterday as well.
Did you guys hear or read the story about AJ Preller and his scouting of Jackson Merrill?
Did you guys see that yesterday?
Piece,
yeah.
Oh my God. Recap it, if you will, and
sure.
I'll throw my color in.
Yeah, so
I can't remember who wrote it.
Kevin Acey wrote it. Yeah,
okay.
I think so. Kind of an all-star piece on Jackson Merrill. Just how he got here so quickly.
Hi, Jack.
To the all-star game in just his first season. And as the story goes, Jackson Merrill was not considered like a high value prospect, at least like his junior year in high school. He was pretty under the radar, not that well known. Maryland is not a place where
a hotbed.
There's a hotbed of scouting, but the Padres found him and were on him early. And they did not want other teams necessarily getting wind of their interest in Jackson Merrill. But AJ wanted to see this guy in person, you know, see what the scouts had shown him. So he went to the game, Severna Park High School,
yep.
But didn't want to be seen. So he hid in the football bleachers, like next to the baseball stadium.
And then
one of the custodians kind of found him.
Hey, like, buddy.
This is closed. Like you can't be
Tom
here.
Up there or something,
he's trying,
dude.
He's trying to hide to make sure no one sees him at this game scouting Jackson Merrill.
Because if somebody sees A.J. Preller there, right? They're like, well, who's he? It's the power of deduction.
There's some interest here for sure.
100%. I never even really thought about how that... I never really thought about that aspect of A.J.'s job of... Not only wanting to go, you know, Paulie's the scout, and Paulie calls me, the GM, and says, you're going to like this kid. And I go, well, everybody knows who I am. If I show up at his game, everybody's going to get on him too, and maybe they'll draft him higher. So I have to be really, really sneaky about going to watch this kid play. I never thought about it like that.
And,
really.
It didn't really work. By the time he got to his senior season, you know, there were 50 scouts at his games and they started following him, but he did fall, you know, Yankees were interested. They thought they might take him before the Padres, but he did end up falling to the Padres, who were thrilled at the opportunity. I thought another funny part of the story, regional scout Jake Koenig and area scout Danny Sater would tell the Merrills all the time it was okay not to talk to any other teams. And Merrill says, I remember I posted a picture with Danny on Instagram one time, and he got, you know, ticked off because I'm a Padres scout. Don't send out that I'm here watching you. We don't want people to know about this and know about you.
What a business, man.
Holy cow. Apparently Jackson was pretty happy that he fell to the Padres. He said they were the most easy, straight up with me organization, talked to me the most, made me feel the most comfortable. So that when he did go to the Padres in the first round, he was really happy that that was the team that ended up with him, the one that was really on him first and following his career from the early stages.
They're talking to the Jets. AJ in a shirt that says not a scout. I'm here on vacation. I'm not here to scout.
I think, you know, you're talking about the subterfuge.
Yeah, the subterfuge
of the GM game. And, you know, part of AJ's, I think, subterfuge is he goes so many places.
Correct.
That you can't always just assume that because AJ's there, oh, they're hot and heavy on a guy.
Do you think that he has actually gone places as a decoy to throw?
I don't know that necessarily as a decoy. I think it's just the
volume.
Sheer volume of it does mask a little bit of who your true interest is in, because you go so many places, other teams can't go. Well, AJ's there. Now, when a GM mostly stays in his office, sends the scouts out, and then comes out once or twice to scout a couple of games, you kind of have an idea that they're really interested in a player. With AJ, you can't really do that because he'll be, you know, in Arizona, and then he'll be in the Dominican, and then he'll be in Asia, and then he'll be scouting at a high school field in the Midwest. And he's all over the place, much more than your typical president of baseball operations general manager.
Yeah, and I've heard that used as a knock against him at times.
It can be.
But when you have now. A guy like Jackson Merrill, that's something you can hang your hat on, man. You were on him for a long, long time. It's got to suck to see one of those guys. I mean, think about for all the ones that he has picked, Ben. Think about all the ones that have gone two picks before his. You know what I mean?
We'll never know.
And you'll never know. And all the time and energy invested that all his staff puts in, it's pretty nuts, man. It would be a tough gig.
Unless someone does write the tell-all book, like the A.J. Preller autobiography that Tony in the chat has requested. Diesel says, a day in the life of Preller. I'd read that book.
In a heartbeat. It will never, ever happen.
I don't think it'll ever get written.
Now, if we talk to AJ soon, I imagine we will at some point soon, I'd like to ask him about his subterfuge. Has he ever gone in disguise? Fake mustache? A wig, perhaps?
I mean, he's always... He doesn't ever... I mean, I don't want to say ever. Like, the Zoom that he did the other day, had a tie, had a coat on, looked fairly business-like.
But he's usually
in his
scouting gear.
He's oftentimes just T-shirt, you know, basketball shorts.
Yeah.
Pretty casual. Like, you wouldn't notice him necessarily in a crowd walking around. Like, oh, that guy's definitely a Major League Baseball scout. No, not really. He blends in fairly well in an audience that you're not even going to notice that he's there a lot of the time.
It's such a gig that... I don't know if there's an amount of money that you could pay me to do. You know what I mean?
travel would be tough.
The travel would murder me. I mean, it would just murder me. And not with two small kids. Even if I was a single man, I still don't know that that's a gig that I could do. You're schlepping out to Lawrence, Kansas to watch some 17-year-old pitcher throw.
I wouldn't mind, like you said, if I didn't have the family ties. I don't know that I'd mind the travel. I just think the pressure of trying to identify, knowing this decision, I'm either going to give this kid $1 million or this other kid $4 million, just based on my impressions, what I've seen, you know, what my guys have told me. And really, it's a fine line. Do you think the difference between the 24th pick and the 25th pick is blatantly obvious?
Right.
No, it's not. It's subtle differences. And this is where you have made your reputation, where you make your, you know, your success in the future depends on your judgment here. And you know it's not a perfect science. It's as far from a perfect science as you're going to probably get in professional sports, is scouting, especially high school players, and projecting what their bodies might look like, how they might develop, their work ethic, everything in like 5 years from now.
Now,
so tough.
Developing players would be awesome. That would be like my favorite thing in the world to do, but to like help guy, you know, mold guys into, you know, young men that
just
can
move to Peoria.
Yeah, move to Peoria and just rip fungos and scream at guys all day. And I think that would be so much fun.
I like everyone in the chat is trying to cast the AJ Preller movie. Who would play AJ Preller? Got it. One more story here from our unofficial official Ben and Woods photographer, Brian Sims. Summer activities gone wrong. Tweets, mountain biking down on ski resort runs. I was younger, dumb, trying to impress a woman, and almost ended up in the hospital. Will never forget the sound of my voice saying, that sounds fun.
Yeah, I'm all in.
Not that fun.
Always to impress a woman.
Appreciate everybody sharing with us. All right, we're going to get into some baseball draft coverage here. Baseball coverage on 97.3 The Fan is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Padres making 10 picks yesterday. Get into them after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So normally at this time on a Tuesday, we'd be talking to Jesse Agler, playing the Incorporator, but on summer break, we give all our regulars some time off to enjoy the break, and we'll get back to Jesse next Tuesday.
I texted him yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah. And I just asked him, I said, you ready to get back to work? He's like, got my little one crying, I'm trying to get my other one to sleep. And I go, all right, asked and answered. Yeah, I know exactly what Mr. Agler's going through. That guy likes being at the ballpark.
Honestly, though, instead of the Incorporator, almost like some of the names of the players the Padres drafted are incorporator-like.
No question.
In their obviously, the first day, Padres took Cash Mayfield and Boston Bateman, two left-handed high school pitchers. But yesterday, they had 10 more selections, including two extra picks at the end of the fourth round, which were in exchange for the qualifying offers they made to Blake Snell and Josh Hader. So ended up with 10 picks between the third and the 10th round. In the third round, took another high schooler, a shortstop named Cobb Hightower.
Cash Boston Cobb to start.
From North Carolina, 6'1", 180. Obviously, you know, long way away from the big leagues. But with their first pick in the fourth round, they took the guy that there's at least an outside chance, probably not likely, but an outside chance you might even see him this season. His name is Tyson Nabers, and he's a right-handed relief pitcher from Kansas State. So, you know, a little bit older, more experienced, throws already in the mid-90s. He's got good, like close to major league quality stuff. Now, you know, he's not a starter. He doesn't project as necessarily a high ceiling guy, but he projects as a guy who could get to the big leagues really quickly
and maybe get outs.
Maybe contribute to a bullpen that, you know, is in need of extra arms. So it's not out of the question that, you know, they throw Tyson Nabers down, you know, and single A, double A, and he does well, and they have need in September for an arm. Again, not expecting it, but it's not impossible.
He's the most major league ready, perhaps.
Probably of all the guys they drafted,
man,
he's the closest to the big leagues.
I can remember having the same conversation about Kevin Copps, who won that award in college, and it was like, bro, this kid, this closer from Arkansas, I haven't seen him since.
He's still down there.
He's still down, yeah.
Yeah. It's a good point.
You know,
and that's why it's still on.
What struck me yesterday was I saw somebody tweet this about the very next pick,
right,
Ben. Kavaris Tears from Tennessee, University of Tennessee. 6 foot, 200-pounder. He's an outfielder. What got me was this description of...
Scouting report.
The scouting report. Few bats in the country can even come close to the hellish raw power that Tears can juice into a baseball. It's elite bat speed from the left side with light tower game power.
Light tower.
Light tower that he's shown off against lesser competition. Again, hellish raw power is an incredible... If you described me in any way with hellish raw power at anything... He said he can juice into a baseball.
Certainly intriguing. Now, why, if he's got that much power, why did he fall all the way to the end of the fourth round?
Breaking balls have given him a little trouble, okay. Benjamin, throughout his college career.
And there's no defense really there. I mean, he plays the outfield, but...
They said he has... scouts like him in left field. He's played all three outfield positions. He's a left-handed thrower. He said lacks the arm strength to handle right field at a high level. The report here is mostly bat. With 80 grade raw power.
But you always need a DH at some point as well. So even if he doesn't pan out defensively, there's could be a place for him in the organization. And then...
hellish raw power.
Yeah, I like that description. The next pick is a name you're familiar with, at least a last name. Clark Candiotti, son of Tom Candiotti, the former knuckleballer and now Arizona Diamondbacks broadcaster who's talked and worked with Matt Waldron a little bit. Now, I don't...
He does not throw the knuckleball.
I don't think Clark throws the knuckleball. Yeah, he's a big kid, though, 6'4", 235, right-hander, who pitched at the University of Arizona, but not a knuckleballer like his dad. Although, no. I guess you could always say, hey, worst comes to worst, it's not working out. Teach me, Dad. Teach me, Matt, and you can go that direction with your career.
I have a hard time, and if we ever get a chance to talk to and interview Clark Candiotti, I want to say buddy. Why? Why wouldn't you? You have like one of the elite teachers of the knuckleball there at your disposal. Your dad, he has to teach you how to throw it. He has to teach you all the trade secrets. Did you mess around with it? Like, he would be a fascinating interview for me, Clark Candiotti.
In the fifth round, the Padres went back to the high school route after a run of college players with perhaps the name of the draft. Third baseman out of Norris High School in Nebraska, Cale Fountain.
Cale Fountain.
K-A-L-E, like the leafy green, and Fountain.
Yeah, Cale Fountain.
Cale Fountain in the fifth round. Then a few other picks, didn't see much. More college players, Darian McDowell, right fielder from West Florida, Kai Roberts, Utah, center fielder, Nick Wissman, right-handed reliever from Dayton, Zach Evans from Lenoir Ryan University in North Carolina. And then a name maybe you heard of in the 10th round, last pick of day two, USD, third baseman and outfielder Jack Costello was the second leading hitter on the Toreros, who were a really good NCAA tournament team last season. Had, I think, like 7 home runs, hit .291, 60 runs batted in.
They call him Clutch.
Good, well-rounded player, and certainly exciting. You haven't seen the Padres take a lot of local guys in the draft in recent years, but something must have caught AJ, Chris Kemp's eyes to take a guy from USD, which was, and there were a few other players from USD who were selected earlier, including Jacob Christian, who was the WCC player of the year. I think he went in the fifth round, maybe to the, was it the Tigers or the Giants? One of those two teams, but a few other local players selected yesterday as well.
Did you guys hear or read the story about AJ Preller and his scouting of Jackson Merrill?
I did.
Did you guys see that yesterday?
Piece,
oh my God. Recap it, if you will, and I'll throw my color in.
Yeah, so.
I can't remember who wrote it.
Yeah, Kevin Acey wrote it. Yeah, okay. I think so. In kind of an all-star piece on Jackson Merrill. Just kind of, you know, where, how
Hi,
he got here so
Jackson
quickly.
Merrill. Hi, Jack.
To the all-star game in just his first season. And as the story goes, Jackson Merrill was not considered like a high value prospect, at least like his junior year in high school. He was pretty under the radar, not that well known. Maryland is not a place where
a hotbed.
There's a hotbed of scouting, but the Padres found him and were on him early.
Early.
And they did not want other teams necessarily getting wind of their interest in Jackson Merrill, but AJ wanted to see this guy in person, you know, see what the scouts had shown him. So he went to the game, Severna Park High School, but didn't want to be seen. So he hid in the football bleachers, like next to the baseball stadium,
like a
And then, like, one of the custodians kind of found him.
Hey, buddy.
Buddy, you can't, you're not, this is closed. You can't be here.
Peeping Tom up there or something,
dude. He's trying to hide to make sure no one sees him at this game, scouting Jackson Merrill.
Because if somebody sees A.J. Preller there, right, they're like, well, who's he? You know, it's the power of deduction.
There's some interest here for sure.
100%. I never even really thought about how that, I never really thought about that aspect of A.J.'s job of, not only wanting to go, you know, Paulie's the scout, and Paulie calls me, the GM, and says, you're going to like this kid. And I go, well, everybody knows who I am. If I show up at his game, everybody's going to get on him too, and maybe they'll draft him higher. So I have to be really, really sneaky about going to watch this kid play. I never thought about it like that.
And,
really.
It didn't really work. By the time he got to his senior season, you know, there were 50 scouts at his games, and they started following him, but he did fall. You know, Yankees were interested. They thought they might take him before the Padres, but he did end up falling to the Padres, who were thrilled at the opportunity. I thought another funny part of the story, regional scout Jake Koenig and area scout Danny Sater would tell the Merrills all the time it was okay not to talk to any other teams. And Merrill says, I remember I posted a picture with Danny on Instagram one time, and he got, you know, ticked off because I'm a Padres scout. Don't send out that I'm here watching you. We don't want people to know about this and know about you.
What a business, man.
Holy cow. You know, apparently Jackson was pretty happy that he fell to the Padres. He said, they were the most easy, straight up with me organization, talked to me the most, made me feel the most comfortable. So that when he did go to the Padres in the first round, he was really happy that that was the team that ended up with him, the one that was really on him first and following his career from the early stages.
They're talking to the Jets. AJ in a shirt that's just not a scout. I'm here on vacation. I'm not here to scout.
Well, I think, you know, you're talking about the subterfuge.
Yeah, the subterfuge.
Of the GM game. And, you know, part of AJ's, I think, subterfuge is he goes so many places.
Correct.
That you can't always just assume that because AJ's there, oh, they're hot and heavy on a guy.
Do you think that he has actually gone places as a decoy to throw?
I don't know that necessarily as a decoy. I think it's just
The volume.
Sheer volume of it does mask a little bit of who your true interest is in, because you go so many places, other teams can't go. Well, AJ's there. Now, when a GM mostly stays in his office, sends the scouts out, and then comes out once or twice to scout a couple of games, you kind of have an idea that they're really interested in a player. With AJ, you can't really do that because he'll be, you know, in Arizona, and then he'll be in the Dominican, and then he'll be in Asia, and then he'll be scouting at a high school field in the Midwest. And he's all over the place, much more than your typical president of baseball operations general manager.
Yeah, and I've heard that used as a knock against him at times.
It can be.
But when you have now a guy like Jackson Merrill, yeah, that's something you can hang your hat on, man. You were on him for a long, long time. It's got to suck to see one of those guys. I mean, think about for all the ones that he has picked, Ben, think about all the ones that have gone two picks before his. You know what I mean?
Then we'll never know.
And you'll never know. And all the time and energy invested that all his staff puts in, it's pretty nuts, man. It would be a tough gig.
Unless someone does write the tell-all book, like the A.J. Preller autobiography that Tony in the chat has requested. Diesel says, a day in the life of Preller. I'd read that book.
In a heartbeat. It will never, ever happen.
I don't think it'll ever get written.
Now, if we talk to AJ soon, I imagine we will at some point soon, I'd like to ask him about his subterfuge. Has he ever gone in disguise? Fake mustache? A wig, perhaps?
I mean, he doesn't ever, I mean, I don't want to say ever, like the Zoom that he did the other day. Had a tie, had a coat on, looked fairly business-like.
But he's usually
in his
scouting gear.
He's oftentimes just t-shirt, you know, basketball shorts.
Yeah.
Pretty casual. Like, you wouldn't notice him necessarily in a crowd walking around. Like, oh, that guy's definitely a Major League Baseball scout. No, not really. He blends in fairly well in an audience that you're not even going to notice that he's there a lot of the time.
It's such a gig that I don't know if you could, if there's an amount of money that you could pay me to do. You know what I mean? To
travel would be tough.
The travel would murder me. I mean, it would just murder me. And not with two small kids. Even if I was a single man, I still don't know that that's a gig that I could do. You're schlepping out to Lawrence, Kansas to watch some 17-year-old pitcher throwing.
I wouldn't mind, like you said, if it didn't have the family ties. I don't know that I'd mind the travel. I just think the pressure of trying to identify, knowing this decision, I'm either going to give this kid $1 million or this other kid $4 million, just based on my impressions, what I've seen, you know, what my guys have told me. And really, it's a fine line. Do you think the difference between the 24th pick and the 25th pick is blatantly obvious?
Right.
No, it's not. It's subtle differences. And this is where you have made your reputation, where you make your, you know, your success in the future depends on your judgment here. And you know it's not a perfect science. It's as far from a perfect science as you're going to probably get in professional sports, is scouting, especially high school players, and projecting what their bodies might look like, how they might develop, their work ethic, everything in like 5 years from now.
Now,
so tough.
Developing players would be awesome. That would be like my favorite thing in the world to do, but to like help guys, you know, mold guys into, you know, young men that
just
can
move to Peoria.
Yeah, move to Peoria and just rip fungos and scream at guys all day. And yeah, I think that would be so much fun.
I like everyone in the chat is trying to cast the AJ Preller movie. Who would play AJ Preller? Got an Adam Sandler. Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah.
It's not actually a bad call, I think.
Not a bad call.
If he could get into the role.
Jake Gyllenhaal
would be a very
Franco.
Good. Yep, Dave Franco.
You know, ideas to play AJ Preller.
No, they said Adam Sandler Hustle Part 2, based on the true story of AJ Preller. Hustle was a really good
movie. AJ Preller like in the draft room just going whoop-de-boo, zip-de-da-da.
Yeah.
I see the look, though, the kind of the dark
hair
look.
The,
Adam Sandler could probably pull that off.
Well, he's like 60 now, but if you're doing later AJ Preller, you could do that.
Yeah, I mean, this could be a movie that's not 10 years away, you know? Probably doesn't get made unless the Padres win, you know, a couple
World,
World Series titles.
Yeah,
and
I'm
get
ready
the ups
for
and downs of AJ Preller to finally get to the point where he has that success, you know, later in his career.
Diesel nailed it. Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, yeah. Joaquin would crush that.
Oh, he'd get into the role completely.
Oh, like, well, from our standpoint... Seth Rogen.
He'd like start playing pickup basketball just to get into character.
Seth Rogen is Mike Schilt. What?
There you go. Get it to laugh.
Oh, all right, do it again. Then you got...
Yeah. Not bad.
That made me laugh entirely too much. And Seth Rogen is Mike Schilt.
And making his big screen debut as Fernando Tatis Jr.
Fernando Tatis Jr. Yeah, he needs to be.
It's Fernando Tatis Jr.
He needs to be in a movie soon at some point.
They'll find a way to do a shirtless scene somewhere.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure,
absolutely.
In the movie.
No, I mean, I don't get super revved up for the draft anymore. But I don't know why that one guy's write up got me pretty good yesterday.
Hellish light tower power.
Yeah, raw power. No one hits the ball as hard and can do as much damage as this guy. Oh, all right. Kavaris Tears. Love it. Looking forward to seeing him.
You know, since he's a high schooler and probably like 18 years old, my idea that
he's in college.
Oh, he's college.
Yeah,
that's right.
He's still 20.
21. Still, my idea that he should wear number 96 to have 96 tears from the oldie song on his back probably wouldn't fly with a 20-something these days.
I'm begging you to do that anecdote at spring training next year.
If I see him, meet him. Ever thought of wearing number 96 after the old song by Question Mark and the Mysterios?
I don't even know this song.
You know the song. Paulie,
96
call up
tears?
96 Tears.
I know 96 bottles of beer on the wall.
96 Tears by Question Mark. It's actually one of my favorites
in terms of
like oldies from like, what, 1960 or something.
Oh, yeah.
But this was, you don't know this song? You know this song.
But I haven't heard it.
Yeah.
96 Tears,
Question Mark, and the Mysterions. We can we'll play it out here to the top of the hour. Well, that was...
2 minute teardrops. Oh, yeah. 96 tears. Song sucks. So bad. I bet you Tavares... what's his name?
Tear. Kavaris Tears.
I bet you he will have no idea. And now you have
zero
to ask
idea,
him that.
I'm sure.
You have to.
Zero. Even it's even old for me.
I'll give you $500. I'll give you $500 to interview him and ask him that question.
Why not?
All right. We can, you know, we can use it after spring training.
All right. Let's get to our final hour. Paulie, I'll get some headlines for us in the Rindle Report. Wasn't a ton going on yesterday. It was All-Star Monday. Yep. He's always got something for us, for sure. Continue on until 10 o'clock with Bennett Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. We'll be right back.